At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
A warm and friendly hello, welcome to Love You Las Vegas for Ghost Girl Soups with myself, Greg Epstein, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast, and got a great podcast for you. He's in the second segment, going to be joined by Brian Bush. I join him every Monday out there in the great state of Wisconsin as he hosts the show BJ and the Bear. That is from 6 to 8 Central Time out there for the Score in Wisconsin. He also does the show 9 to noon with the game in Milwaukee, does work with the Big Ten Network, also does work with Fox Sports covering college basketball, also does work with the Herd as well, the G League team of the Milwaukee Bucks. So this guy does a little bit of everything, and he is going to be joining me. We're going to be talking about the Big Ten teams in the NCAA tournament, some of the intriguing games for Thursday, including another team from the state of Wisconsin, Marquette, and how they're going to be faring. And in the final segment, I'm going to be giving you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Thursday, as we had some bank shots on NCAA tournaments aside from one college basketball classic game. So yeah, you guys covered there. First things first, always do love to be able to answer your Twitter questions on this podcast. And you've got one or two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, naming does not matter. So as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And from there, you're able to find whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did wind up getting one question in from you guys on total, so let's dive in.
So you have questions, and Greg may or may not have any insight into them, but let's dive into the Twitter mailbag.
I know that you guys were asking me if I wind up doing anything different when it comes to the college basketball season, and one thing that I do wind up doing is I do wind up shading down my totals a little bit because these are higher stakes games, and you'll notice that bookmakers are going to be a little bit more likely to move for less, shall we say, people like to use the word sharp. I think that it's misappropriately used because sharp betting is not necessarily picking like 60% or anything like that. It's those that wind up firing on a number early. It's respected bettors in regards to just the eyes of bookmakers in general, and they wind up moving lines very early on and getting the line to settle in where it is. So I'm not going to use that term, but professional bettors, you're able to get a little bit more variance when it comes to non-professionals because you have a lot of people that they fly in from insert your state here to Las Vegas. Those of you guys out there on the East Coast, I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of folks flocking to Atlantic City to watch the first round of the NCAA tournament games. And let's call it what it is. Casual bettors, they typically aren't flying in to root on a whole bunch of air balls. And in a total of like 120 in San Diego State versus Creighton, take it under, hoping that the game is going to be a 45-40 slobber knocker. That is one aspect of it. Number two, you've got higher stakes games. And what that typically means is that the pace is going to slow down just a hair. And the biggest thing that winds up going on these 18 to 23 year olds is jump shooting. So it's a little bit two pronged there. I do wind up shading down my totals with regards to this. Like, you take a look at it, and I do think the bookmakers, they fall into the same vein as well. You just take a look at some of these totals, something like a Richmond versus Iowa total that, as I'm doing this, seeing the total right around about a 150 to a 150 and a half. I would think that more towards the regular season, you'd probably be finding this closer to 153, in my opinion. So I think that that was shaded down about a full 2-ish points. Something like Baylor versus Norfolk State in a regular season game, I'd probably think that that would be a little bit closer to a 140-ish. Right now, we're finding that more around a 137.5. So I think the bookmakers take note. I do think that they wind up doing a solid job of being able to shade down those numbers. And I do think that it is something important to take a look at. So hopefully I did a good job of answering that. And once again, any questions that you have at GUnit_81 on Twitter. Now let's take a look back at everything that we wound up getting on Wednesday in college basketball. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy recap.
If you, like me, wound up having Rutgers, boy, that was a tough one as Notre Dame, they get the job done in double overtime by a kind of 89-87. You had the bad block charge call, and then you had Rutgers just not being able to block out in general as this was a game in which defense was relatively optional. Both teams wind up shooting right in the neighborhood of about 51% from the floor. Notre Dame hurt themselves a little bit at the free throw line, going 9 of 16. And for Rutgers, they did a good job from 3, going 11 of 27 from distance. Ron Harper Jr., 22 points in this one. Caleb McConnell didn't do a great job on defense, but he did give you 23 points and 11 rebounds. Both of these teams relatively efficient with the ball as Notre Dame in a double overtime game, just 5 turnovers. That was very, very telling in this one. And for Rutgers, once again, the battle on the glass, they actually won it by a count of 44-32, but when they absolutely needed the rebounds, they did not wind up getting them. Paul Atkinson, the putback at the end, 26 points, 6 boards, 13 of 15 from the floor. He and Nate Lazowski, the reason why Notre Dame is going to be facing off against Alabama in a few days. You wind up seeing the other NCAA tournament game go the way of Wright State. Wright State was the right side, 93-82 in a game in which you wind up seeing another over. So you wind up having 2 overs in those first 4 games, and overall, the over is 3-1, but small sample size there. And when you wind up getting a double overtime game, well, hard to get an under there. But for Bryant, 4-24 from 3-point range, a team that was playing very fast, not necessarily efficiently, and showed up in this one. Peter Kiss was able to give you 28 points, but it was a Bryant team that they just had a tough time with their outside shooting. Meanwhile, Wright State, they wind up going 9-21 from 3. As Sander Holden, boy, was he holding it down. 31 points and 11 rebounds. So he certainly came to play in this one for Wright State. They did wind up committing 16 turnovers, but for Bryant, 24 fouls in this game, as well as Hal Elisaeus wound up fouling out of this game with 8 points and 6 rebounds. So Wright State, they were able to survive in advance. Wound up seeing a lot of action from the basketball classic, and you did wind up seeing a couple favorites being able to come through, and you wound up seeing a couple meltdowns, as if you like me, wound up laying the points with Alabama. This was brutal. They wind up winning but not covering by a count of 70-68. They were up in this game by a grand total of 19 points early on. It was 56-37 with 11 minutes remaining. Southeast Louisiana has a Herculean feat as they wind up going just 40% from the floor, but 15 of 19 at the free throw line. And for South Alabama, 8 of 28 from 3, 6 of 14 at the charity stripe, as they were able to do a solid job of being able to force Southeast Louisiana into 16 turnovers, but wound up seeing a couple underdogs be able to cash in. And you actually saw a couple of unders in these basketball classic games. Youngstown State versus Morgan State, that winds up going under, much like Southeast Louisiana versus South Alabama. And Youngstown State win but no cover, 70-65. This is another one in which you wind up seeing quite a bit of a meltdown with Youngstown State. They were up by 15 points at the half, and I do think that at one point they wound up getting up by right around 13-14 points in the second half, and then they just were unable to close this one out as Morgan State winds up covering despite going 0 of 10 from 3-point range because they went 15 of 19 at the free throw line. Youngstown State, they were solid at the line, 21 of 25, but Morgan State just 12 turnovers. Youngstown State, they commit 14 of them, and for Morgan State, you wind up having Malik Miller go off for 19 points, 13 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks to be able to give Morgan State a cover. Wound up seeing quite a few underdogs cashing the NIT as Iona, they're unable to get the win, but they're able to get a cover against Florida by a count of 79-74. Florida was trailing for much of this game. They wound up putting out a nice run. Looked like they had a chance to cover. Unable to close it out late. Colin Castleton was able to give you 18 points, 13 rebounds. Florida as a whole, 7-24 from 3-point range. And for Iona, they shot 46% from Florida, but they shot themselves in the foot with 16 turnovers, as well as Florida won the rebound battle by a count 39-37 as Nelly Jr. Joseph, 18 points, 12 boards, for Iona. Long Beach State, they use a big run to take down Long Beach State, 93-72. Not typical that you wind up seeing a favorite come out with that much fire, as this game was 57-57 with 11 minutes and change remaining. And then from there, BYU, they wind up being able to go on just this massive run, as that was a 27-15 run, I do believe. As that was a 37-15 run, I do believe Caleb Blonner was able to give the team 20 points, but 9 of 11 from the floor. And for Long Beach State, they wound up going 3 of 22 from 3-point range. 31 of 41 at the free throw line on the road, by the way. And BYU attempted 15 free throws. Not very often that you wind up seeing a free throw disparity of 26 for the road team, but You wound up having it in this game at Long Beach State, despite that wound up losing by 21 points. So you're seeing some hilarious results. Southern Utah takes out Kent State by a count of 83-79 in this one for Southern Utah. 12 of 29 from three-point range. Trey Martin was able to give you 27 points. And for Kent State, they wound up committing just 8 turnovers in this game, but they wound up just being able to not be able to hit their twos in this game from inside the arc. They wound up going 17 out of 38 in this contest. So Southern Utah was able to win from within in that one. And St. Louis wound up having just an absolutely terrible run as they were down in this game in the second half to Northern Iowa by kind of 55-51. And then they just wound up going as cold as an igloo as Northern Iowa winds up being able to go on a 20-0 run to be able to get a win by a count of 80-68 for Northern Iowa. They couldn't miss from three, 16 of 37 from distance. And you will notice that some of these NIT games do get a little bit more harebrained. Francis Okoro, 12 points, 13 rebounds for a St. Louis team that, give them credit, they actually fought hard all season long, considering the fact that their leading scorer from last year, Javonte Perkins, wound up being out the entirety of the season, but not enough to be able to close out there. If you wound up taking Virginia late because they opened up right around 2-point favorite, they closed a 3-point favorite. This was rough as Mississippi State winds up getting the loss, but they are able to cover by a count of 60-57. It was a game which it looked like Virginia was going to be able to run and hide with it late, but Mississippi State was able to put together a late run. And then for Virginia, they had a chance to be able to put it away at the free throw line. You wound up having a pair of Jaden Gardner missed free throws. By the way, you also wound up having Virginia falling at the end of the game as well, and that was a little bit of craziness, but Virginia is going to survive in advance to play against North Texas in the next round, by the way. Virginia and North Texas, two slowest teams in all of college basketball, so we have that to look forward to as both teams in this game wound up going 23 of 46 from the floor. Virginia just 2 of 12 from 3, but they were able to go 12 of 17 at the free throw line, and for Virginia, they were able to do a good job of being able to control the ball. 9 turnovers for them, 14 for Mississippi State to be able to survive in advance. Toledo, they just wound up melting down at the end of the year, 74-55. They get bludgeoned by Dayton. Dayton was able to shoot 50% from the floor, and for Toledo, they just were unable to get it going on the glass, 42-34. Malachi Smith wound up missing this game for Dayton, but the man that stepped up with regards to facilitating the ball, Kobe Elvis, 11 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds. You had Dayton go just 3 of 3 at the free throw line, by the way, so not a lot of charity stripe shots there, but for Toledo, 4-23 from 3-point range, a team that was one of the best in all of college basketball at that regard, not able to get it done. Florida Gulf Coast, they are able to get it done, though, in the Basketball Classic, 95-79, as they wound up going 13 of 33 from 3-point range. Tavion Dunn-Martin, a walking bucket with 33 points, and then you wound up having Kevin Samuel be able to come through with 12 points, 8 rebounds for Detroit. Antoine Davis, 24 points. He had a solid year, but with that said, Detroit just playing no defense, and they were unable to get anything going there. And Maryland Eastern Shore, a good year for a team that wound up opting out of last season. Just not enough to be able to hold in against Coastal Carolina. 66-42, the final in this one is Coastal Carolina. 9 of 26 from 3-point range. A team that I think could be able to make a little bit of a run. They were dealing with an injury to Rudy Williams. He was back, came in off the bench. 18 points in this one. And Isam Mustafa, only 3 points and 7 rebounds in this game, but he's going to be a good low post presence in the entirety of this tournament. And if you're taking a look at college basketball in general, we wound up seeing yesterday where you wound up seeing the underdogs wind up pretty much having a 50-50 split of things, and you wind up actually seeing overs wind up going 8-4 overall. You take a look at what wound up happening in college basketball on Wednesday, and you did wind up seeing a little bit more under flair as you wind up having 7 overs, 7 unders, and overall underdogs, they wind up going 7-6-1 against the spread. So that's what we wound up seeing in college basketball yesterday. Now let's turn the page forward to Thursday, and we've got Brian Butch joining me. He does an absolutely terrific job over there at the Big Ten Network. He does absolutely amazing work when it comes to all of his radio work in the state of Wisconsin with the game in Milwaukee, the score in Appleton. We're going to be joined by him next, taking a look at these Big Ten teams, taking a look at Marquette, and just the intriguing games that we've got for Thursday in general in the NCAA tournament. That's up next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hughes Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hughes, and now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast, and we've got a great guest joining me today as we're being joined by Brian Butch, as we're being joined by Brian Bunch. He does a great job as a college basketball analyst over there at the Big Ten Network, along with Fox Sports. You'll be able to catch me every Monday with him on the show BJ the Bear. That is on the Score out in the lovely city of Appleton, Wisconsin. That is 6 to 8 a.m. Central Time out there. And then he hosts a show that is called 9 to Noon. And if you can guess what time that is, well, you're very wise. 9 to noon out there with the game in Milwaukee. And to be able to follow Brian Butch on Twitter, that is at Brian_Butch. And Brian, great to have you aboard. Thank you.
It's always great to be aboard, Greg.
It is great to have you aboard. And it is great that the field of 64 is now set. And it's great that we're going to be getting some absolutely tremendous matchups for this college basketball Thursday. And when it comes to the Big Ten in general, I would say that they didn't necessarily come in the world's greatest form. I like the way that Iowa is coming into the NCAA tournament, but what did you wind up seeing the last few weeks from these Big Ten teams? Because I just wasn't necessarily impressed with a lot of these teams like Illinois, like Wisconsin, going into this tournament.
I agree with you about some of them. I actually like Indiana. I thought Indiana played with a sense of urgency because they needed to get in. And I think the matchup against St. Mary's is really good for them. I really do. I think that's a team that was trending the right way. Now, they needed to win the first game. They did that. They ran into some travel issues, which makes it a little bit more difficult for this Indiana team. But if Xavier Johnson can play at the level that he has played at times, and Trace Jackson Davis is playing at the level that he is, which is outstanding, watch for them to make a run here and possibly get an upset. Iowa, you're right. I think Iowa is one of the hottest teams in the country. And what they've done and how they've played, they're shooting the three. They're playing with a great pace. Defensively, they're connected. As far as Wisconsin, yeah, I've struggled the last couple of games. You have to remember, however, Johnny Davis out the second half against Nebraska. Johnny Davis' ankle not nearly 100% against Michigan State. That's a big reason that they have not been playing well. I think them going into a Friday helps them more rest. I also think not having to get on an airplane and playing in Milwaukee is crucial to the success of Wisconsin. You get a home crowd behind you, but you also don't get all the ups and downs that goes with a sprained ankle, an injured ankle. You're able to kind of monitor that better. You're able to get more treatment. All those things that go into factors there that a lot of people aren't talking about. Johnny Davis healthy, this Wisconsin team, especially with the pace and the path that they have, I think it's a clear path to the Sweet 16. I mean, they've go against a Colgate team that's second in the nation shooting the basketball, has experience. But Wisconsin's a team that knows how to guard the three-point line. They know how to fight over the screens. Colgate, which is surprising, does not shoot it well from the free throw line. How you win games. Wisconsin does not shoot the ball well from three, but I think Johnny Davis, healthy, is able to get to his spots. They win, and then they play, possibly Iowa State or LSU. LSU doesn't have their head coach. How do they respond? So, and Iowa State kind of struggled getting in a little bit as far as the second half of their schedule. Where does that put them? I really like that matchup, and I think the path to get to the Sweet 16, the easiest, is Wisconsin.
I think that it's really interesting to take a look at this Wisconsin team because you do have a little bit of a pesky Colgate team, but I think that they're going to be able to get by them, as we do have Brian Butch joining me on the podcast. And I do think that the fact that Wisconsin is going to be playing in the state of Wisconsin for those first two rounds, and then from there, if they wind up surviving and advancing past that, you wind up going to Chicago. That is something that needs to be taken a look at as well, because they're going to have home court advantage relatively throughout the rounds of the NCAA tournament. Now, Kansas, if they wind up playing them in the Elite Eight, that is obviously going to be a case in which Kansas fans, they always travel very well. But I do think that it is something that you need to factor in with Wisconsin. I just feel like one of the biggest unknowns in this tournament is going to be LSU, because I could wind up seeing LSU coming out on fire. They're a team that's absolutely amazing on defense, and LSU could wind up laying a stinker as well.
You're right, Greg. LSU is an interesting, interesting team. If you can defend, you give yourself a chance, and that's what they can do. Now, how do they handle the distractions? I don't know, right? And anybody that says that they do know is crazy, and that's the thing that makes this team so interesting to me. They can defend. They can make life hard if Wisconsin wins. It makes it maybe slow it down a little bit more. But I think the experience of Wisconsin, understanding and playing through the Big Ten, will help Wisconsin in this case. But it is a very, very interesting matchup and interesting team if it gets to that point.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I do think that that is going to be very fascinating to take a look at as we do. Brian Butch joining me on the podcast. Does an absolutely amazing job doing radio all throughout the state of Wisconsin. And when it comes to a Big Ten team that we're going to be seeing on Thursday, that would be Michigan. I think losing Devontae Jones is really going to put them behind the eight ball in this game against Colorado. A little bit of a body clock game here for Colorado State. They're having to travel. They're going to be having to deal with that. It's a 9:15 a.m. Pacific, so mountain time for them, 10:15 a.m. game. But I do take a look at Michigan, and I can't feel necessarily too good about this team heading into this game because they haven't guarded all year long. And losing Devontae Jones for this game, I think, is a really big loss.
Greg, you're 100% correct. As soon as I saw that, my thought on who was going to win the game changed immediately. And I think that has a lot of people need to pay attention to that. Because what wins in the tournament? I'm a big fella, Greg. I wish I could say bigs win in the tournament. But it is guard play. And you have to not turn the ball over because live ball turnovers lead to easy buckets. And I think guard play is so important. And you look at this, the loss of Devontae Jones gives the advantage to who? It gives it to Colorado State at that position. And I think, for me, that's how that changes. I think Colorado State wins that game, even though, like you said, all those things are going against Colorado State. On top of it, I really like Colorado State in general. I just thought that matchup was going to be extremely tough. Devontae Jones out, I think Colorado State wins, and I don't think it's that close.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I do think that having Devontae Jones out of the fold is going to be hard for Michigan. Will be intriguing to see what they wind up doing if they are able to survive in advance in that game. And I also think it's going to be really intriguing to see what we wind up getting out of another Big Ten team that is going to be playing, because we were raving about Iowa. Now they wind up facing off against a Richmond team that is about as veteran as it gets in the NCAA tournament. A whole bunch of guys that wind up returning for their fifth year. Tyler Burton is really the only guy in the starting lineup that isn't a senior. And it is a Richmond team that they had to claw their way back from deficits in the Atlantic 10 tournament just to be able to get here. I think that Iowa's going to be able to survive in advance. I think that they wind up getting the job done. I take a look at it, though, and I would not be surprised if this is a single-digit game. I'm seeing a line of 10.5 with regards to the point spread, and I think that that's too many in a game in which I think that you've got a bunch of upperclassmen on both sides are really going to be slugging it out.
Greg, I completely agree. Completely agree with you on this. Because Iowa, if you remember who won the Big Ten tournament last year, Illinois, what happened to them in the second round? That long run, if you look at teams that have had those long runs and have been as hot as long as Iowa has been hot. Now, Iowa's everyone's front runner here to possibly come out. Not everyone's front runner, but they're getting a lot of talk. It scares me. They're in a position that scares me. I've had been on teams that have won Big Ten tournament championships. I've been on teams that have lost in the Big Ten tournament championship. That first game is always difficult because everyone's been telling you how good you've been. And I truly believe that this is a game that is going to be extremely close. I think Iowa, when it comes down to that, what do I look at? The guy with the best player on the floor, and that's Keegan Murray. So I do think Iowa survives, but I think this game is extremely close. I'm telling you right now, I've seen Iowa as a Final Four finalist. I like what the team has done recently. They've played fantastic. They're one of the hottest teams. I get all of that. There's just something in my gut that says, can they keep it going during the NCAA tournament? It helps having Keegan Murray. That's why I think they get past Richmond. But I think it's going to be a lot closer to what people think.
I think so as well. I think that Richmond is going to be able to do a very solid job in this game. They're going to be able to keep it close. And speaking of close games, how about the 8-9 matchup that we're going to be seeing on Thursday as well between Marquette and North Carolina? I wound up advancing North Carolina in my bracket. With that said, I think that this could very well be a one-possession game with North Carolina, a team that shoots it really well from three, but the defense, it leaves a little bit of something to be desired. Meanwhile, with Marquette, they did wind up having their difficulties towards the back half of the season. I feel like they might have played a little bit above their skis towards the middle part of Big East play where they were really a flamethrower, but I take a look at this game, and I think that Chaka Smart has a little bit of a coaching advantage here. I think that North Carolina, with regards to the athletes themselves, especially Armando Bacot, they have a little bit of an advantage down low, but I think that this is going to be a really good game. I've got North Carolina outright, but I could see this, once again, being a 1-2 possession game.
Yeah, Bacot, you look at what he's done. I think rebounding the basketball is going to be crucial in this game. Marquette, not a great rebounding team. You talked about what Marquette was doing in January, and it was all because of Tyler Kohler. You look at assists in January, He was averaging over 2.3 assists more in January than he did in February. Now, defense has changed the way they guarded Tyler Cook. They went under the screen. Tyler Cook needs to step and make threes. There's three guys for Marquette: Tyler Cook, Greg Elliott, and Cam Jones. Those guys are able to come in and knock down threes, and if they're able to give you six of them, Marquette will win the game. That's the question mark. You look at what Tyler Kolek's done when they've gone under, he hasn't wanted to shoot that three. So the defense has been able to shrink, which means less perimeter shooting options because the defense is tight and they're not needing to have longer closeouts. So that's a big thing that I look at. That's why that month of February has been more difficult for Marquette. Rebounding, I talked about that earlier, but I think that's going to be crucial in this game. Marquette, not a great rebounding team. How do they rebound the ball? Kerkweth, how is he going to play? Does he watch his fouls? I think that's very important in this game. And then you look at Iguodala, what is he going to do coming off the bench? I think paint points, dominating rebounds, Marquette's able to be even with that, and they're able to get some threes from those three guys I talked about. Marquette would be able to pull the upset. I do think the strength and power on the boards is going to be what separates us. I give a little, and I mean a little bit of an edge to North Carolina just because of some of those crunch time moments, tight games, what happens, second chance opportunities. You give up an offensive rebound, that's a killer. Now, Marquette, how can they find a way to win it? That press, they can play with that havoc that Coach Shaka Smart likes to play with. He talked a lot about being violent. Watch them come out and be more physical and be the aggressive team. If they do that and they get out to an early start, watch their confidence grow.
I think it's going to be so interesting to take a look at this Marquette versus North Carolina game. I've got it, one, the tightest with regards to the ones that we're going to be seeing in the first round. And when it comes to just what you're going to be watching for in general in the first round of the NCAA tournament, Brian, is there a game or two that we haven't discussed that really piques your attention?
I do. I think, you know, the Creighton game that they've got, I think, is interesting. You watch that, what could possibly be a setup with Kansas. Creighton played extremely well in the Big East tournament, made the run there. How does that set up? I think that's a young team, but I think that 8-9, are they able to move over to that? And I also think when you look at the big picture of some of these that are in the tournament, the Texas game, is Texas able to get going and play a little bit? Because I think Texas has the capability of possibly getting a Purdue team. And I think that's going to be an interesting one. I know a lot of people have Texas as a possible upset special. They have not played great, but the two of the three losses that they've had have been to Baylor and Kansas. There's no shame in those losses. The loss to TCU, okay, you can have a conversation if that was the case. They're not trending the right way. However, the two losses they've had have been to the number one seeds. What are they able to do? Because this Purdue team, as much as I love them, they've had two chances in the last 2 weeks to win a Big Ten championship, regular season and Big Ten tournament. With as much talent that they have on their team, they haven't been able to do it. To me, that raises a red flag, Greg, and a lot of people have Purdue in that Final Four. And I could be wrong, no questions about it. But this Purdue team, there's just something about them that I've seen over the last 2 weeks. Credit Iowa, credit Wisconsin. But if you got a chance for a Big Ten championship in front of you and you don't capitalize it and you get two opportunities in 2 weeks, there's just something that's a little off there. Can Texas get things rolling? I think that's interesting.
Yep, I'm right there with you on that as well, because I actually advanced Texas to the Sweet 16 in my bracket. Now, I don't think that Yale is going to be able to pose much of a threat to Purdue. They just don't have the size. That is going to be a complete mismatch there. But with Texas having a coach in Chris Beard that has made runs in the NCAA tournament with teams from the great state of Texas before, I think that that is going to be very intriguing. And Brian, I know you're going to be doing an absolutely amazing job of taking a look at the NCAA tournament. You do a great job just covering the Wisconsin sports scene in general. Do a great job with Big Ten Network, Fox Sports as well. List goes on and on. You do it all, my friends. So let the good people at home know they're able to follow you on social media, just everything that you've got going on in general.
Yeah, give me a follow at Brian_Butch. Absolutely love college basketball. I'll be in Milwaukee for the first round to catch all of that. And then I'll be down at the Final Four on Radio Row covering all of it. So give me a follow at Brian_Butch. Absolutely love what you do, Greg. I love the effort, the energy you put into it. There's one thing about the media side of it that I absolutely enjoy. And it's the grind of diving into all of these games, all these matchups, looking at everything, and being able to do it every single day. we're lucky at what we get to do. You're one of the best at what you do, Greg.
I appreciate it, and got to appreciate everything that Brian does as well, because on top of that, he also does Milwaukee Herd games as well. He's actually doing this just after a Milwaukee Herd game. Guy is an absolute relentless worker, a guy that absolutely loves, eats, breathes, and sleeps basketball, and those are the people that we like on this podcast. That's why we love Brian so much. So big thanks to Brian Butch for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the Visa Family Podcast. Coming up next, it is that time podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Thursday. As we eat some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops, and now part of the Beeson Family Podcast, and it is always a pleasure to be joined by Brian Butch. You're doing a great job out there in the great state of Wisconsin with the Big Ten Network, Fox Sports. You're able to catch him on 9 to noon over there with the game in Milwaukee. I join him every Monday on BJ and the Bear, that is in the Score in Appleton, Wisconsin. Guy does absolutely amazing work, covers all forms of basketball, and join me on the podcast today. So big thanks to him. Now it is that time podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Thursday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at GUnit_81. It's a little bit funky how they wind up doing these, so I'll have all the listings at the bottom with regards to the description and everything like that, with the highlights with every game that I do wind up hitting. But it seems like we're just pretty much going east to west, because we're going to be starting out with the games out there in the great state of New York. Then we're going to be going with the games out there in Texas. Then we go Indiana, and then we go Portland, Oregon. And then we've got one game for the basketball classic between Eastern Washington and Fresno State. As I always say, money is money. We're going to be hitting upon that as well. So we're going to be pretty much doing this by pod as we begin with 719, 720 on the betting board. New Mexico State and UConn are going to be doing battle. UConn's a 6.5-point favorite. Total on this game is saying 131.5 and 132. And those of you guys that listen to my Bracket Breakdown podcast, you know I've got UConn making a run in this one, and I like them in this spot. I wound up saying them as an 8.5-point favorite. Now, New Mexico State, a top 50 team with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis, but I do think that things are going to be a little bit tough for them against a UConn team that rebounds heck out of the ball. UConn, a top 25 team with regards to rebound rate, and I believe one of only like two or three teams in all of college basketball with multiple players giving at least 2 blocks per contest. Adama Sanogo along with Isaiah Whaley. Now, New Mexico State is actually in the top five in all of college basketball in terms of the percentage of their shots that do not wind up getting blocked, so they wind up getting clean looks, but I do think that UConn's going to be able to affect that. Andre 3000 Jackson has been terrific for this UConn team. 7.7 boards, 3 assists, shoots 36% from 3-point range. Jordan Hawkins seems to be a little bit questionable for this game. He's been dealing with a little bit of a concussion, but he's been out for a little bit anyway. That really did not affect my handicap here. Tyrese Martin, 13.5 points, 7.5 boards. He's able to bomb it at 43% from 3-point range. And the big thing with New Mexico State, turnovers. They turn the ball over 14 times for contest. They're neither really an up-tempo team nor a slow team. So with regards to taking care of the ball, they're in the bottom 100 with all of college basketball in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis. I think that that's going to be a little bit costly. It's not like UConn is necessarily the world's greatest pickpocketing team, but at the same time, they're not too bad. They get right around 6 steals per contest. I do like the active hands that you wind up getting out of someone like an RJ Cole Tommy. Paulie does a solid job, give you 7.5 points as well. He's able to be a versatile threat. And then when it comes to New Mexico State, it's really all about Teddy Allen. And Teddy Allen, the leading scorer from Nebraska last year, has been great for this team. He's been able to give you 19.5 points, 6.5 boards. Guy that's able to shoot 33% from 3-point range. So he's very rock solid with that aspect of things. And with regards to this New Mexico State team, they do have quite a few guys that they do a good job of knowing their role down low. You've got a guy like Sir Jabari Rice, who's able to give you 12 points, 5.5 rebounds per game. Johnny McCants, Will McNair Jr., both of these guys give you right in the neighborhood of about 5 rebounds per game as well. So these guys have been able to do a solid job there, but I mean, you've seen it with New Mexico State. They're able to lose to anyone. They lost to Chicago State a few weeks ago. I think that this is going to be a very tough battle for them. I think that they're going to have a tough time taking care of the ball. They do a good job with their interior defense, but you've got a UConn team that they themselves have been able to do a good job with regards to inside as well. UConn is allowing opponents to shoot just 42.8% on 2-point shots, number 5 in all of college basketball. I think that UConn is going to be able to pump in there a couple threes, set my total at 146.5. I'm looking over, and with UConn, made them a 6.5-point favorite. here. And also keep in mind, this is the game out there in Buffalo, New York. So UConn, not necessarily a lot of travel. New Mexico State, a lot of travel. So I'm willing to lay the points here with UConn. Set them as an 8.5-point favorite. Maybe by a total 136.5. So going over. 721, 722 on the betting board. Vermont and Arkansas do battle. Arkansas is finding themselves anywhere between a 5 and seeing a couple 4.5s out there as a point favorite. Total is anywhere between 139 and 139.5. Vermont is actually a bottom 35 team with regards to possessions frame now. Vermont, one of the most efficient teams in all of college basketball, both on offense and on defense. This is a team that, with regards to points scored and points allowed on a per-possession basis, they've really been able to check the boxes in both of those metrics as they're in the top 30 in both of them. But I do think that Arkansas is going to be able to stifle them, and I think that those numbers are built a little bit on sand, because you take a look at this Arkansas team night in and night out, they're having to go up against the big boys out there in the SEC. And with Vermont, we're going to call what it is. They're playing against teams like Maine, Binghamton. So I mean, it just is a big step up with regards to competition. And you take a look at what you've been able to get out of Stanley and Moody for this Arkansas team, and it has been very good. A guy that overall for the year is shooting 37% from three, 12 points per contest. But really, ever since the turn of the new year, it's been more like 15 points per contest. And in a road and neutral court environment, is someone that has been able to shoot right around 40% from three-point range. JD Note has been a constant for the Arkansas team. In 32 games, he has scored double figures in 31 of them. Generates a little bit over two steals per contest. Now with Vermont, we've got a pair of guys, Ben Chungu, Ryan Davis. They combine for 33.5 points, 10.5 boards. They both shoot above 40% from three-point range. This is an Arkansas team, though, that they're going to be able to bear down on defense. I do think that they're going to give a little bit of different pressure than what you're used to seeing as well when it comes to this Vermont team. They also have a versatile guy in Isaiah Boom Boom Powell, is able to give you 9.5 points, 6.5 rebounds per game. But also something that should have you a little bit nervous about Vermont, they are not a good perimeter defense. 230th in the country with regards to opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. I think that that's going to be a little bit of an issue for them. You've got an Arkansas team that they are a little bit up and down with regards to their perimeter defense over the last three games. Opponents have actually shot 46% on them, but I think that they are going to be able to tighten up with that regard. I think that they're going to be able to win from within, because you do have Jalen Davis, who's able to do a tremendous job down low for this Arkansas team. Guy that's been able to chip in there right around 10.5 points, 9.5 rebounds. He's able to give you 2.5 assists per contest. Odie's Tony and Chris Likes out there in the backcourt combined for about 19 points per game. Arkansas shoots 75% at the free throw line. I think that Arkansas, bigger, faster, stronger in this game. I think that the level of competition is certainly something that you want to be taking a look at, and I think that's going to be very massive. I said Arkansas is a 9-point favorite. I think that Vermont is going to look to try to play very methodically, very slowly, because they are, once again, in the bottom 35 of the yards possessions per game. So semi-total 137 as well. Diving under, and I'm willing to take Arkansas here laying the points. 723, 724 on the betting board. Norfolk State and Baylor are going to be doing battle. The Bears of Baylor find themselves a 20-20.5 point favorite. Total on this game is 137.5. And when it comes to this total, I did wind up saying my total at a 137.5. This wound up opening up at 138. I wound up taking this under a little bit earlier on. Here at 137.5, if I had to pick a side, I would be taking a look at the under, because this is a Baylor team that they've had their struggles a little bit more on offense. And I do think that this could be a situation in which you wind up seeing the injury to LJ Cryer winding up manifesting itself. It is someone that has been really solid for Baylor all season long with regards to 3-point shooting percentage. He is confirmed out for this game. And you've got James Akinjo, who's now going to need to do a little bit more out there in the backcourt. And Akinjo, in the last few games, to his credit, he's been able to button down, been able to turn the ball over less, 3 turnovers or fewer in 4 out of the last 5 games, but he can get a little bit loose with the ball. Guy that overall for the year has been able to give you 13.5 points per contest, only shoots 30% from 3-point range. Norfolk State, actually a top 25 team with regards to defensive efficiency, points allowed on a per possession basis. You've got a Norfolk State team that they do rank in the top runner with regards to just overall possessions per game, but a lot of that is because they're going up against a bunch of MEAC teams that they just absolutely gun it. Norfolk State, out of conference, they played a little bit more of a slow and controlled style. Baylor, they're very much not a team that necessarily goes fast or slow. Baylor in the top 15 with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis, and to the credit of Baylor, they do a good job generating swipes. 8.8 steals per contest. Akinjo gives you 2 per contest. You've got Kendall Brown, who's going to be good to go. He and Adam Flagler combined for a little bit over 2 per game, and Flagler and Brown both shoot about 39% from 3-point range. You combine to be able to give you about 23.5 points per contest, but when it comes to down low, not having Jonathan Chama-Chachua is big. Flo Thamba, Jeremy Shane, they combined to be able to give you 12 rebounds per game. But Chris Bankson, actually, while he was at Little Rock during the 2018-19 season, led all of college basketball with regards to field goal shooting percentage. That year, he shot 81% from the floor. This year at Norfolk State, he's been solid. 11.5 points, a block, right around 7 rebounds per game, shooting 71.5% from the field. This guy is absolutely magnificent with that regard. comes in having blocked 7 shots in the last 3 contests. Joe Bryan Jr. is someone that's able to give you 17 points, 3.5 assists. It's a Norfolk State team that they don't do a lot of pickpocketing. They shoot right around 35% from 3, but I think that the role players are going to need to step up. Dana Tate, Christian Ings, both shoot about 44% from 3. Both of these guys give you between 9 and 9.5 points per contest, with Ings wound up falling a little bit out of favor with his team towards back half of the season, but sounds like he'll have a pretty significant role in this game with Baylor. Not having Jonathan Chamochachua out there, I think it's going to be a little bit costly for them. I think that Baylor is going to get the job done. I don't think that you have any sort of a massive upset. Like I said, you're at 137.5. I'd be looking under before I'd be taking a look at the over. I wound up taking an under a little bit earlier when this was more around 138.5, but 137.5, the absolute max that I'd be willing to take under once you wind up hitting 136.5, 137, then it's going to be a take on the over for me. But I still like this number under, and with Norfolk State, set them as a 17.5-point underdog, so we'll take 20-plus here with Norfolk State. 725, 726 on the main board. Marquette and North Carolina are going to be doing battle. UNC is a 3.5-point favorite with your total anywhere between 151.5 and 152. Talked with Brian Butch about this game. Made my number 3 early on in the week. This started out at 3. Now that we're at 3.5, I'm going to be on Marquette. I'm hoping that we wind up getting a 4 in this game. If we only get 3.5 in this game, I will take the 3.5. I've got North Carolina advancing in my bracket, but I don't think that's going to be easy. You've got Armando Bacot, who I really think is going to be the difference maker in this game. He's in the top 5 in all of college basketball with regards to rebounds per game. A guy that's able to pull in there 12.5 boards, go along with 16.5 points, just under 2 blocks per game. Now, I think that Justin Lewis is actually going to be able to do an okay job in this game. Guy that shoots 35% from 3, 17 points per game, and there is a little bit of revenge on both sides. North Carolina wound up booking Marquette for a little bit of a pad game for their NCAA tournament resume last year. Marquette went into Chapel Hill and punked them, and then you've got Dawson Garcia, who wound up transferring over to North Carolina. He has been out since early January. If he does wind up playing in this game, and it looks like he's not going to, I've just assumed him out until further notice. Well, he's not going to be at 100%, so you don't have to worry about that. But Caleb Love, RJ Davis, you do need to concern yourself with them. They combine for about 29 points per contest. Both of these guys combine to shoot about 37.5% from 3. Brady Manick is right around 6'8". He bombs it at 38.5% from 3. But with North Carolina, the big bugaboo for this team is that they just don't do a good job with regards to their defense. You take a look at them in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and this is a team that they're outside the top 150. As a matter of fact, 177, giving up 10.1 points more per 100 possessions when they're in a road and neutral court environment. Now, Marquette, they're a little bit of a Medusa team in that they don't necessarily do one thing great. They're 90th with regards to defensive efficiency, 150th with regards to offensive efficiency, but they shot 37% from three-point range. A Big East play, Daryl Marcel, one of the better on-ball defenders in this game, 13.5 points, 2.5 assists. He's able to shoot 35.5% from three. Cam Jones, Greg Elliott, both of these guys shoot between 39 and 39.5% from three, both giving you 7.5 points per contest. Kirk Koth, down low, has been solid. And Tyler Kolek, we were mentioning it with Brian Butch, he's going to be a key in this game. A guy that's able to give you 6 assists per contest. I think that Marquette is going to be able to hold in this game. I did wind up setting this line at 3, so I'm going to be taking a look at the points. I did wind up setting this total at 147. Both of these teams are relatively up-tempo. I mentioned it with Marquette. This is not necessarily a team that does an absolutely amazing job of being able to light it up. We have seen North Carolina be very touch and go with regards to their defense, to say the least, but you just take a look at them on terms of possessions per game. Yeah, they're a little bit more up-tempo, but they're right around 80th in the country, so I don't think that you're going to get anything overly harebrained in this game. Semi-total at 147, I'm diving under, and with Marquette, made them a 3-point underdog, so we'll take 3.5 plus here with them as we move on to 727, 728 on the betting board. This is going to be the first game of the day. Michigan and Colorado State. Colorado State was a 2.5-point underdog. Now they're anywhere between 1 and 1.5. Your total on this game is anywhere between 136.5 and 137. And when it comes to the spot, we were mentioning it with our good friend Brian Butch. I do think that it is pretty big that you're going to have Devontae Jones out of the fold in this game. I did wind up setting my total initially at 140, and I did wind up making Colorado State a 3-point favorite. I shaved this total down a little bit more. I wound up setting it more on a 138, so I am still on the over in this spot, but Devontae Jones being out of the fold caused me to take my total down by 2 points, and it caused me to go from Colorado State being a 2-point favorite to a 3-point favorite. And the big reason why is because when Devontae Jones was out there in that game against Ohio State, he was really the difference maker for them in that contest. I really felt like he was a heart and soul guy. He really did a good job of being able to take over that Mike Smith role, a guy that's able to give you 4.5 assists or 2 turnovers per contest, 10.5 points, right around 4.5 rebounds per game, a guy that had really been coming in strong as well. Double figures in 4 of the team's last 5 contests, 18-plus points in 3 of those games as well, and cut down on the turnovers 3 or fewer in each of the last 6 contests. And now you've got Isaiah Stevens, who is going to be able to have himself a nice day for former Colorado State team that they only turned the ball over right around 10 times per contest in the top 15 in all of college basketball. In that regard, got a guy in Stevens who has been able to do a good job doling out 4.8 assists and 1.7 turnovers per contest. Shoots 37.5% from three, 90% of the free throw line in Colorado State. They do the little things well. I mentioned the lack of turnovers. They shoot 77.5% at the free throw line, 36% from three. The big trepidation that you've got with Colorado State, you've got one guy that gives you more than 4.2 rebounds per game. That'd be David Roddy, and he's able to go rowdy. 19.5 points, 7.5 boards, 2.5 assists, steal, block per game, shoots 45.5% from three. John Tonje, not necessarily the same when he's in a road slash neutral court environment. When he's at home, shoots 43% from three, is able to give you right around 10 points per contest. On the road, right around 9 points per contest, but more of a mid-30s three-point shooter, and has scored fewer than 10 points in each of the team's last four contests, so that is something that is of a little bit of concern, but I do like the way that they've been able to have Chandler Jacobs be able to come on, a guy that's able to give you right around 4 rebounds per contest, a little bit of a hit-or-miss guy, but wound up having 18.7 rebounds in their win against Wyoming a few weeks ago, guy that has really been able to have some special moments for the team, and then with Michigan, obviously, Hunter Dickinson, 7-footer that's able to give you 18.5 points, 8.5 boards, block and a half per contest, is able to bomb it from 3, that is solid, but now you put a lot of pressure on Eli Brooks. Not having Devontae Jones out there means that he's going to need to step up 12.5 points, 3 assists, shoots 39% from 3 for a Michigan defense that is outside the top 200 with regards to opponents' 2-point shooting percentage and overall points allowed on a per-possession basis. Musa Diabate, 9.6 boards, relatively solid there, but Caleb Houston, he's a liability for this team away from home. On the road or in a neutral court environment for this gentleman and Mr. Houston, 8 points with a 26.5% 3-point shooting percentage. If you take a look at him at home, he is able to give you right around 12.5 points and shoots more in the neighborhood, about 45.5% from three. That is a big, giant delta right there, and I think that that could be the difference in the game. So Colorado State as a 3-point favorite, won't delay it. Semi-total 138, so we made a little bit of moves with regards to Jones being out of the fold, but still like what I liked earlier in the week. Colorado State on the money line, and the total over 729, 730 on the betting board. Longwood is going to be taking on Tennessee. Tennessee is finding themselves in between 18 and 18.5 point favorites in your total on this game. Sarah between 132, seeing a size of 133.5, and do I think that Tennessee gets the job done and rather comfortably? Yes, I think that we went a little bit too far here. I wound up setting my line more in the neighborhood of 13.5. So I'm going to be taking a look at the points with Longwood. You do have a transfer that comes in from the ACC that has really been able to do a nice thing for this team. That would be Isaiah Wilkins. He has been able to give the team 13 points, 6.5 boards. She's 40.5% from 3-point range on absolute fire. 13 plus points in all three games that they wound up having in the Big South tournament. A guy that's able to generate right around a seal and a half per contest. And it's a Longwood team that they rank in the top 100 in terms of both offensive and defensive efficiency. Justin Hill, 14 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, steal and a half per contest. As a matter of fact, each of your top 3 scores for Longwood give you at least 1.3 steals per contest. Longwood as a collective shoots 38% from 3-point range, so I do think that they're going to be able to do a solid job against a Tennessee defense that they are one of the best in all of college basketball. In terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, they're in the top 15. They generate 9 steals per game. The big thing with Tennessee, though, is that this is also a team in which they do have their deficiencies when it comes to being able to put up points on the road. It's a team that, with regards to 3-point shooting percentage, at home they shoot right around 39% from 3. On the road, it's more like 32% from 3. Santiago Vescovi along Kennedy Chandler both give you 13.5 points per contest. They combine to be able to give you right in the pocket of about 7.5 assists per game, so these guys are relatively solid, but you've only got one guy that's able to give this team more than 5.5 rebounds per game. That'd be Josiah Jordan James, 9.5 points, right around 5.5 boards, a steal and a block per contest. He does a very solid job there, and you take a look at Tennessee, their perimeter defense, it has been relatively solid. 53rd in the country in terms of 3-point shooting percentage, actually allowing a lesser percentage in a road and neutral court environment. But Longwood is 50th in this metric as well. And when it comes to Tennessee, I just don't know if Brandon Huntley Hartfield and his right around 3 rebounds per game is necessarily going to do a ton for the team. Wound up seeing more minutes down low for the team towards back half of the season and wound up having his moments. But I think that this is just a little bit too big for Tennessee to be laying in this spot. Did wind up setting my total at a 135.5 as well. You've got a solid Tennessee defense, but at the same time, a Tennessee team that actually ranks in the top 130 with regards to possessions per game. So I'm taking a look at an over in this spot, and I'm going to be willing to take the points here with the Lancers of Longwood. 731, 732 on the betting board. San Francisco and Murray State are going to be doing battle, and this is a DK Nation pick. Murray State's a 2-point favorite. Was a 1-point favorite before we wind up seeing a little bit of an injury that I'll hit on in a second. Total on this game is anywhere between 136.5 and 137. I've got Murray State as a 5.5-point favorite. They are the DK Nation pick because you've got Juan Mozlowski. He is going to be out of the fold for San Francisco, and that is brutal. They have to go up against a Murray State team that's in the top 15 with regards to rebound rate, and a Murray State team that's 1 of 4 in all of college basketball in the top 15 in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per possession basis. And with Muslowski, he was really doing it all for the San Francisco team down low. 13.5 points, 9.5 boards, 2.2 blocks per contest. Now, the one encouraging thing for San Francisco is that they played without him against Gonzaga. Gonzaga was blowing them out, but they were able to make a Herculean feat to be able to cover that spread, lose that game by 10. But now it's up to the backcourt of San Francisco. You've got Jamari Boye, Khalil Shabazz. They combined to be able to give you 30.5 points per contest. Shoot about 36% for three. Shabazz is able to shoot about 84% of the free throw line. But for San Francisco as a collective, they shoot 69.5% of the free throw line. They've got to go up against a Murray State team in which each of their top five scores give you at least a steal per contest. And San Francisco, 163rd in the country with regards to being able to take care of the ball. You've got to expect guys like Patrick Tepe, Zane Meeks are going to need to step up with Muslowski out of the fold. And then you take a look at Murray State, and you've got a guy that is 6'10", KJ Williams, that's able to bomb it from three, shooting right around 34% from distance, 18.5 points, 8.5 rebounds per game. You got Justice Hill, who's been able to give you 5 assists, a little bit over a steal per contest. He shoots 36% from three. Tevin Brown is walking bucket, 17.5 points, 5.5 boards, 3 assists. One of the more versatile players that you're going to find in this NCAA tournament, Trey Hannibal, good glue guy with right around 5 rebounds per game. Not necessarily the world's deepest team, but I think that you're going to be able to get a little bit of production out of someone like a Carter Collins. Collins is a guy that comes in off the bench, shoots right around 32% for three, 86% the free throw line, able to flow a little bit of offense, good on-ball defender for a Murray State team that does a great job of being able to hold up at the point of attack with that regard. This is a San Francisco team that is a little bit more up-tempo. I do think that we're going to see a little bit of late-game fouling, but I do think that this actually helps you over a little bit having Muslowski out of the fold because Murray State is going to be able to knife the ball inside, be able to get a couple more open looks on two-pointers because San Francisco really runs you off the three-point arc, and Murray State, they're a team that does a solid job of being able to get the ball inside. So semi-total 138. I'm looking over. And with Murray State, they are the DK Nation pick, laying the points with them. 733, 734 on the betting board. Kentucky is going to be taking on St. Peter's, the Peacocks. All right, 17.5 to an 18-point underdog. Your tallest game is 131.5 and 132.5. And for St. Peter's, I did wind up saying them as a 13-point underdog. St. Peter's, a top 25 team with regards points allowed on a per-possession basis. And Casey Ondefu is going to be able to hold things down low. Actually led off college basketball in terms of blocks per game last season. He and Fusani Drame have been able to do a good job as a two-man band down low. These two guys combined to be able to give you 13 rebounds per contest. Drame is able to give you 7.5 points and is able to shoot 37% from three. You've got Ndefu, who's giving you 1.3 steals, 2.5 blocks. He's able to give you 10.5 points per game. Now, for St. Peter's, taking care of the ball is an issue. They turn the ball over 14 times per contest with regards to turnovers on a per-possession basis. Bottom five team in the NCAA tournament. But with that said, you've got Matthew Lee, who gives you 7 points, 3 assists. He's able to bomb it from three. St. Peter's as a whole, they shoot 35.5% from three. And this is not a Kentucky team that's going to go out and do a bunch of pickpocketing. Now, Oscar Sheboy is, in my opinion, the player of the year at this point. 17 points, 15 rebounds, right around a steal and a half, right around a block and a half per contest. They've been absolutely superb with that regard. And Kentucky, to their credit, in a road and neutral court environment, opponents shoot 27.4% from three-point range off of them. The only two teams that are better is Gardner-Webb and VCU. Now, San Francisco, to their credit, going back to last game, they're number four with that regard, so give them a little bit of credit there. But I do think that St. Peter's is going to be able to do a solid job. They'll be able to force a couple turnovers of their own. Kentucky's a team that they turn the ball over right around 11.5 times for contest with Xavier Wheeler. 10 points, 7 assists, but 3 turnovers. That is a little bit of an issue. Keon Brooks is someone I do like for Kentucky. 11 points, 4.5 rebounds. But I think that out of all the lesser teams that you could have gotten, the 14, 15, 16 seeds, St. Peter's is probably the best one with regards to being able to hold up on the glass against Oscar Sheboy. Out of all of them, this is a St. Peter's team coming in tremendous form in terms of defense. They have given up 63 points or fewer in every one of their games here in the month of March. As a matter of fact, you have to go all the way back to when they wound up playing Siena 8 games ago to find a time in which they gave up more than 65 points. This is a St. Peter's team that they do a great job with that regard. And Kentucky, no short shrift with regards to their defense. They rank in the top 25 with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis. Kentucky in the top 15 with regards to points scored as well. I think that St. Peter's is going to do a nice job of being able to make this a very grimy game. I think that there's going to be a lot of turnovers. It's going to be yucky. I think that Kentucky does wind up getting the job done because they're going to be able to do a better job on the glass. But did I am saying my total at 131? I'm willing to dive under. And with St. Peter's, I think that they hold in there, set them as a 13-point underdog. So taking the points and the under as we wind up going to 735, 736 on the betting board. You've got Texas Southern, and they are going to be taking on Kansas. Shock, shock, surprise, surprise. Kansas find themselves as a sizable favorite favorite here of anywhere between 21.5 and 22.5 points. Your total on this game is anywhere between 144.5 and 145. And in this spot, I do wind up saying Kansas is a sizable favorite of 21, but I think that we've gotten up a little bit too lofty because Texas Southern is a team that they do a relatively solid job with their defense, a top 30 team with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis. Now, this is a Texas Southern team that they really generate no offense whatsoever. When you take a look at it, it's a team that they shoot right around 31.5% from three-point range, but in terms of points that they wind up getting off of made threes, they are one of the lesser teams in the NCAA tournament. They've only got one guy that gives you more than 9.5 points per contest. That'd be John Walker III. Sagitt suffered 10 points, 4 boards, shoots 42% from three-point range. And for Texas Southern, they only shoot for the year 67% of the free throw line, but you saw it against Texas A&M Corpus Christi. In that game, they wound up shooting a little bit over 75% at the free throw line. P.J. Henry has been able to do a solid job out there in the backcourt along with Bryson Etienne. They combined to be able to give you 17.5 points per contest. They combined for about 3 assists, so I do like what they're bringing to the table, and they do have a guy in Bryson Gresham who's going to be able to hold up down low. 7.7 boards, 2.5 blocks per contest. Saw starts on that final four team of Houston a season ago, and then you take a look at Kansas and David McCormick, Jalen Wilson. These two guys combined to be able to give you 21 points, 14 rebounds. They are special, but what is really big for this Kansas team, Remy Martin, a guy that averaged 19 points per contest last year at Arizona State, was banged up for much of conference play this season, but he came back in the Big 12 tournament, looked very solid in those last two games. Wound up having a combined 22 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists, and 3 steals in wins over TCU and Texas Tech. They won and covered both of those games. He brings the team a little bit more defense. He brings a good offensive dimension to be able to help out Oshae Ogbaji along with Christian Braun. Braun able to stuff the stat sheet with 14.5 points, 6.5 boards, shoots 38% from three, and Ogbaji, one of the best on-ball defenders in college basketball, shoots 40.5% from three, 19.5 points per game. Kansas is going to be able to dominate Texas Southern out there in the backcourt, but I think that Texas Southern holds their own down low. I do think that Texas Southern, with their relatively slow play, is going to be able to keep this game a little bit lower scoring. Set my total at 143. I'm diving under with Kansas. I think that they get the job done and rather comfortably. I think we've just went a little bit too far here. Set my line at 21.5. So I'm looking at the under and I'm looking at the point. 737, 738 on the bang board. You've got Creighton and they're going to be taking on San Diego State. San Diego State is finding themselves as a favorite of 2 points. Totals anywhere between 120 and 121. And with San Diego State, this is a team that I did wind up setting as a 4.5 point favorite. You've got to love what you've been able to get out of Matt Bradley ever since Thanksgiving. Shooting right around 45% from three-point range with just over 16 points per contest. And on the flip side, you've got a Creighton team that has been dealing with that Ryan Nembhard injury. And with Nembhard, he was the leader in assists for the team. And he winds up playing it all in the NCAA tournament. You got to figure that he's going to be relatively hampered. But you do take a look at this Creighton team, and even with him in the fold, bottom 75 team at taking care of the ball, turning the ball over right around 14 times per contest. This is a San Diego State team that they do a good job of being able to swarm to the ball. Top 5 team with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis. Each other top 3 scorers give you at least 1.1 steals per game. Trey Pulliam, Lamonte Butler, they have been able to combine for 16 points per contest. These two guys combined for 5.5 assists, both shooting the low 30s from 3-point range, but they had a little bit of something on offense. Chad Baker-Mazzara has been able to shoot about 39% for 3, 90% of the free throw line, good sharpshooter, and I think that Nathan Mensah is going to be able to do a solid job down low against Ryan Kalkbrenner. Both of these guys for their respective teams give you between 7 and 7.5 rebounds per game. Kalkbrenner, 2.5 blocks per contest, and Ryan Hawkins, 14 points, is able to shoot 36% for 3-point range, but with Crane, they shoot 30.5% from 3-point range. That is a big giant issue. They don't necessarily force a lot of steals. I think that San Diego State is going to be in their happy zone. San Diego State is going to be able to slow this game down, and I think that their defense is just better than that of Creighton, as both teams are looking to hang their hat with that regard. I did wind up saying my line in this game, San Diego State being a 4.5 point favorite. I think that they get the job done in this spot, so I'm willing to lay it. Set my total at 116.5. I think that San Diego State's overall defense, overall just grimy play in general, wins out in this spot. So looking at the under and looking at San Diego State, we go to 739, 740 on the betting board. You've got Iowa and Richmond doing battle out there in New York. Richmond is a 10.5 point underdog with your total anywhere between 150, seeing a size of 151.5. And with Richmond, I didn't mind saying them as a 6.5 point underdog. I think that there is something to senior laden teams when it comes to this time of the season. And I think that Richmond, knowing that this is going to be their last chance, they are going to be able to hold in there. You've got Jacob Gilliard, a guy that's able to give you 3.1 steals per game, leads all of college basketball in that regard. As a matter of fact, he is the all-time Division I leader in terms of total steals. He does a terrific job of running a efficient point guard spot for this team, as you've got a Richmond team that they only turn the ball over right around 10 times per contest. That is one of the best marks in all of college basketball. You do have an Iowa team that, obviously, defense is not their forte. They rank outside the top 140 with that regard. And Richmond, they themselves are outside the top 140 with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis, but Richmond outside the top 225 with regards to possessions. They'd like to slow things down a little bit more. Jordan Bohannon has been good in road and neutral court environments, a guy that overall for the year, shooting right around 30.5% from three-point range, 11 points per contest. We saw the shot that he wound up hitting in the Big Ten tournament. Keegan Murray is going to be the best player out there on the floor, 20 23.5 points, 8.5 boards, able to give you two blocks, 1.3 steals per game, shoots over 40% from three. But with Richmond, I think that they're going to be able to do a solid job with Tyler Burton and Grant Golden. They combine to be able to give you 30.5 points, 14 rebounds. Golden gives you nearly three assists per contest as a 6'10 stretch player, and Burton at 6'8. He shoots 38% from 3-point range. I think that this is a tougher matchup for Murray than I think a lot of people realize. Patrick McCaffrey wound up dealing with a little bit of injury. He should be good to go in this one, but when it comes to the Richmond support, I do think that you're going to be able to get a little bit more out of Nathan Kao, guy that wound up really struggling towards the beginning part of the season, but has been able to come on strong here towards back half of the season. 3+ assists in three of the team's last five contests, 9+ points in four of them as well. A guy that is not really looking to stretch a floor, but does a good job as a 6'7", little bit of a bowling ball sort of guy. I think that Richmond is going to look to slow down the game a little bit more, and I think that they're going to have success with it. Ultimately, I think that Iowa is going to be able to get the job done. Iowa themselves are a very efficient team in the top five at all of college basketball with regards to fewest turnovers on a per possession basis, shooting 75% the free time, 37% for three. But I think that Richmond holds in this game with Jacob Gilliard being able to place a lot of pressure out there on the backcourt. Won't take the points with Richmond. Set this line at 6.5. Semi total 147.5 as well. So diving under 741, 742 on the betting board. South Dakota State is going to be taking on Providence. Providence is a 2-point favorite with your total between 147.5 and 148.5. This total has just completely fallen off a cliff. This opened up at 151.5. This is a total that I wound up setting at a 146 personally. So we're still within my strike zone on the under, but just know that you are not getting the best of the number here. I still like the under, but like I said, we've seen quite a fall off here. But when it comes to this Providence team, they have been getting the job done late in games all season long, but you've got to wonder if Jared Bynum is going to be experiencing a fall off with regards to his 3-point shooting, because this is a guy that in road and neutral court environments shooting over 50% from three after last year. He shot 11.9% from three. Now, it would be very far-fetched for him to be shooting 12% from 3-point range again this season, but it's been a little bit of a term season for him. He has really been able to come on strong for this team, and I give him all the credit in the world. Ever since the month of February started, so February 1st on, he has scored at least 16 points in all but two of the team's contests. He has been terrific for this team, and then you got down low, Nate Watson, coupled with Noah Horkler. These guys are very solid. They've been able to combine for right in the pocket of about 13 rebounds per contest. Horkler, 9.5 points, shooting 40% from three. Watson, more of a two pros presence, giving you 14 points per game. Al Durham, you got to figure that he's going to be healthy and good to go in this game. 13.5 points per contest, throws out 3.3 assists. But with this Providence team, they are a bottom 75 team with regards to possessions per game. And when it comes to transition, they allow a lot of points in transition. South Dakota State, one of the top 25 teams with regards to total possessions per game, they're looking to gun it. And this is a South Dakota State team that they shoot as a collective 45% from 3-point range. Nobody else shoots better than 40.2% from distance. That is a big, giant issue against Providence team that, when it comes to defending the three, they're right around 57th in the country. Providence has actually been able to do a relatively solid job with this regard. You do have a South Dakota State team that defense is not necessarily their forte. This is a team that they rank outside the top 200 with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis, and, as a matter of fact, 270th with regards to opponent 3-point shooting percentage. But this is a Providence team that I think that they're going to come back to earth a little bit more with their 3-point shooting, and this is a South Dakota State team that I think that they're going to be able to do a good job at the point of attack. Douglas Wilson, former Summit League Player of the Year, 16.5 points, 5.5 boards. He's shooting 40% from three. Baylor Shireman, 16 points, 8 boards, 4.5 assists, steal and a half per contest, shooting 47% from 3-point range. Charlie Easley, Alex Arians, both of these guys coming off the bench, both of these guys shoot 50%+ from 3-point range with 8 points per contest. South Dakota State has a little bit of depth. They're going to really speed up the tempo in this game. I think that Providence is going to be having a tough time with it. I think that Providence is going to be experiencing a little bit of a woe on offense. 72 points or fewer scored in 3 of their last 4 games. And the game before that, well, the only reason why they wanted breaking 70 is because that was that triple overtime game against the X-Men of Xavier. So I think that South Dakota State speeds this game up. I think that they get Providence out of their rhythm, and Providence is not going to be able to respond. I like South Dakota State here outright on the money line. Set my total on 146 as well. So we're going to be diving under along with the Jackrabbits. 743, 744 on the betting board. Gonzaga is going to be taking on Georgia State. We have seen quite a line move with regards to this game as Gonzaga wound up opening up in some spots as high as about a 27.5 point favorite. That is long gone now as you're finding them anywhere between 22.5 and 23.5 point favorites in your total on this game. And between 148.5 and 150. And this is a spot in which I did wind up setting Georgia State as a 21-point underdog. I felt like they were disrespected a little bit earlier. Line has come down, but I still do like Georgia State in this spot. Now, certainly, it's going to be a difficult situation for Georgia State to be able to match up with Gonzaga because you do have Drew Timmy along Chet Holmgren. Holmgren is an absolute unicorn. You take a look at this guy, 14.5 points, 9.5 boards, shooting 41% from three with 3.6 blocks per contest. And Timmy, 15.5 points, 6.5 rebounds. He has been amazing as well. But outside of that, Julian Strother Andrew Nembhard, Rozier Bolton. I'll give you between 11.2 and 12.5 points per contest. They do a very solid job. With Nembhard, he does a little bit more facilitating. 5.5 assists, 1.8 turnovers per contest. You've got Strother shooting 40% from three, and Bolton shoots 47% from three-point range. That's going to be tough for a Georgia State team that they've been relying a little bit more on defense this year. Georgia State, typically a very good three-point shooting team. This year as a collective, they're only shooting about 33% from three, but they wind up dealing with a lot of COVID issues. I think that this is a team that has really been able to reach their peak recently. You take a look at this Georgia State team, and they do give up the three. 342nd in the country with regards to opponent's three-point shooting percentage, but Aleel Ansume has been able to shore things up down low. A guy that's able to give you right around 9 points, 9.5 rebounds per game. He's been rock solid. Underrated with Gonzaga is how good they have been with regards to their defense. They are in the top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency, so they're both doing it on both sides of it because you do have so many guys down low like Drew Timmy, Chet Holmgren that are able to do a solid job, but I do take a look at Georgia State. Corey Allen is the guy that's able to give you 14.5 points per contest. He shoots 35.5% from three-point range. Georgia State has really had to adapt and be able to get the ball down low a little bit more, and they've been able to do so. Jalen Thomas, guy that's able to give you 8 points per contest. I like what I've seen out of him recently. Not a guy that's going to go bombs away from three-point range, but a guy that has been very effective for this team. He's given you at least 7 points at each of the team's last six contests. And then on top of that, you got a guy in Kane Williams who's been able to give you 12.5 points, 3.8 assists, right around 2 turnovers per contest. Georgia State has really slowed down their play a little bit more. Gonzaga, as we know, this team is just going to run it and gun it. They rank in the top 30 with regards to possessions per game, so it's a good old situation if something's got to give. I think that Georgia State is going to have to speed up a little bit more. I think that Gonzaga winds up getting their tempo, but I think that Georgia State going to be able to hang in there enough for a cover. Set this line at 21. I'm going to be willing to take the points, and with Georgia State, I did wind up making the total in this game despite their little bit slower play of 153. So I'm looking over, and I'm looking at the points with Georgia State. 745-746 on the betting board. Boise State and Memphis do battle from Portland, Oregon. Memphis is finding themselves a 3-point favorite in your total game between 133 and 134. I do think the fact that this game is Portland does allow Boise State a little bit more of an advantage. I wound up awarding them a half a point just for the travel alone, but this is a Memphis team that I think that they are going to be up for this game. I said Memphis has a 4.5-point favorite. The big thing with Memphis is cutting down on turnovers. They're in the bottom 25 in all of college basketball with regards to turnovers on a per-possession basis, but you take a look at it. Getting back Landers all along DeAndre Williams just did wonders for this team, and you take a look at the defensive efficiency for this team. Ever since they wound up getting that first win over Wichita State in January, they've been a top 20 team with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis. Now, as we know, Boise State, they're a top 30 defense as well with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis, so I think that they're going to be able to do a good job of holding up at the point of attack. But Boise State, even though they do a better job of not turning the ball over, they are a team that they shoot 64.9% of the free throw line. Bottom three among teams that wound up making the NCAA tournament. You've got Tyson Dagenhart, who's been able to do a solid job coming in, shooting 41% from three, 10 points per contest. Emmanuel Acott shoots right around 40% from distance, 10.5 points, 3 assists per game. But Boise State, you don't necessarily have that one guy at the controls. Acott gives you 3 assists. Marcus Shaver Jr., Abu Kia both give you right around 2.2 to 2.5 assists per game. They combine to be able to give you 27.5 points per contest, and Shaver solid from 3-point range. Boise State overall, they shoot 35% from three, but you do take a look at this Memphis team, and Jalen Duran should be able to control things down low. 12 points, 8 boards, 2.2 blocks per contest. Malaydin Armas has been able to give you 8 rebounds per game, nearly a block per game. So he's been able to do a solid job of being able to hold up at the point of attack. Memphis was not very good at being able to guard the three-point shot earlier this season. They have really been able to buff up, and they've been able to help out with that regard as well. It's a Memphis team that really towards back after the season, they've been a top 40 team with regards to being able to guard the three-point arc. Meanwhile, you take a look at this Boise State team, they're outside the top 100 with regards to opponent three-point shooting percentage. So I do think that that's going to be a little bit of an issue. You do have a couple guys like Tyler Harris that are able to shoot a ball from three-point range. He makes 40% of his threes, 88% of the free throw line, 9 points per contest. I think that with Memphis, you've just got too much depth for Boise State to be able to match up with, and too much athleticism as well. This is a Memphis team that they're in the top 50 with regards to possessions per game. Boise State is in the bottom 50, and ultimately, I think that this is going to be close enough to where it winds up coming down to late game falling advantage Memphis. So that means that we side with Memphis in this one. Set Memphis as a 4.5-point favorite. Won't lay it. Set my total at 134.5, so I'm going to be taking a look at the over as well. 747, 748 on the bang board. St. Mary's and Indiana do battle. Indiana is a 2.5 to a 3-point underdog. Total on this game in between 126 and 126.5, and I want to say my total at 124. You've got an Indiana team that has been able to do a very solid job on defense, and they're going up against the St. Mary's team that is one of the slowest at all of college basketball. Bottom 35 with regards to possessions per game, but what you do have to like about this Indiana team is that they've been able to do a solid job with regards, not necessarily giving you a lot of offense, but they've been able to do a solid job on defense. This is an Indiana bunch that they're probably not going to be able to generate 10 turnovers on the point guard once again, but I do like the way that you've been able to have Xavier Xavier Johnson be able to come on for the team? Averaging right around 2.5 turnovers per game, but 11 points, shooting in the high 30s from three-point range. He has really been able to help out his game recently. And then you take a look at the flip side for the St. Mary's team, and you do have a guy in Matthias Toss, who's been a very versatile guy for the team. 12.5 points, 6 boards at 6'10", a guy that has been able to dole out 2 assists. So he's been Mr. Do Everything for the team. Double figures in each of the last 5 contests, but has also had 4-plus turnovers in 3 of the team's last 5 contests. That is of note, and I just don't think that St. Mary's is going to have an answer for Trace Jackson Davis. 18.5 points, 8.5 boards, 2.5 blocks per contest. On top of that, Race Thompson has been able to do a solid job. He's chipping in there right around 7 rebounds per game. He gives you 11.5 points per game. Now, you are going to need to get more out of guys like Miller Cup, Perker Stewart, these guys that only give you right around 6 points per game. But what I think is very big is that Jordan Geronimo, who's been dealing with a couple of ailments, he looked very good in that game against Wyoming, 15.7 rebounds. So that reassures me that Indiana has a good chance of being able to get the job done. Now, Tommy Cousy is a guy that really knows his role, right around 12 points, shooting 47% from 3-point range, 3.5 assists per contest. And then you've got Logan Johnson along with Alex Dusas, who are both double figure scorers. Johnson is able to give you 2 steals per contest. You got a St. Mary's team that they do shoot 76% at the free throw line, but you think that they're going to be bottled up, especially inside by an Indiana team that they do a great job with that tenacious defense. And with St. Mary's as well, they allow opponents to be able to knock down open threes. They are right around 230th in the country with regards to opponents' three-point shooting percentage. So I do think that that is going to wind up hurting them a little bit in this spot. I like Indiana outright. I set them as a one-point favorite. So I'm going to be taking them on the money line. Set my total at 124 as well. So I'm diving under. This is the last NCAA tournament game. And then we're going to be hitting the College Basketball Classic game. You've got Akron and UCLA here, 749, 750. UCLA opened up a very sizable favorite in some spots as high as 16. Now you're finding this anywhere between 13.5 and 14, and with your total anywhere between 128 and 128.5. I think that Akron is going to be able to hold up in this game. I like UCLA to be able to make a big run, and certainly I think that UCLA is going to be able to get the job done on the money line, but you take a look at this Akron team. They're in the bottom 35 with regards to possessions per game, and they've just been slowing games down to a crawl. The last time they wound up giving up more than 70 points in a game, you have to go all the way back to the month of January. Each out of their last 15 contests, they have held opponents to fewer than 70 points, and with Akron, I do think that Darinke Freeman is going to be able to do a good job down low. 13 points, 10.5 boards, a little bit over a block per contest. Now, you don't have a lot of rebounding outside of him. Xavier Castaneda is 3.6 rebounds. That is the next best on the team. But Castaneda, 13.5 points, those rebounds, 2.5 assists per game, shoots 37.5% from three. That's all. Ali is a 6'8 combo player that shoots 41% from three. Then you take a look at the flip side. Johnny Juzang has been able to do a solid job for a UCLA team that's a little bit more mid-tempo this season. They were very slow last season. They bumped it up a little bit. Johnny Juzang, 16 points, 4.5 boards, shooting 36% from 3, was banged up towards the back half of the season, but last 2 games of the Pac-12 tournament, 26 points, 4 assists, only a grand total of 2 turnovers between those 2 games. That's very encouraging. Tiger Campbell, much better at being able to hit threes this year than last year. He and Cody Riley combined to shoot about 42% from 3. Campbell, 11.5 points, 4.2 assists, and it's a big reason why UCLA has been so efficient. Only 9.2 turnovers per contest, one of the best marks in all of college basketball. You do have yourself Miles Johnson, who's been able to give you a block and a half per contest, not necessarily much of a score, only giving you right around 4 points per contest, but 5.5 rebounds. I do think that UCLA is going to be able to do a solid job down low. I think that they're going to wind up winning the rebound battle, but Akron is a team that they only turn the ball over right around 11.5 times per contest. They've been able to get some good production. I have guys like Greg Tribble, who's a little bit more of an on-ball defender, but it's been able to give you 6-plus points in each of the last 4 contests. It's been doing a good job of being able to throw out the ball, at least 3 assists in 3 of the last 4 games. Akron, really a team in which a whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and I think that they wind up holding up here against UCLA with their very slow and methodical style. They wind up setting the total at 131.5. I think that there's going to be open threes for both of these teams, so looking at the over, Animal and take the points here with Akron. Now we hit the basketball classic game of 877, 878 on the betting board. You've got yourself Fresno State, and they're going to be playing against Eastern Washington find themselves as a 13-13.5 point underdog with your total on this game 132. Eastern Washington is very good at being able to bump up the tempo. This is a top 50 team with regards to possessions per game. You've got a Fresno State team that's in the bottom 10 with regards to possessions per game. So you've got fast on slow here. It's an Eastern Washington team that they rank right around 190th with regards to opponent's three-point shooting percentage. Fresno State, they've been very good on defense. A team that they rank in the top 25 with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis, but Fresno State a little bit weaker on the exterior. They're a team that they allow opponents to make right around 32.5% of their threes. That's good for about 120th in all of college basketball. I think that that's going to be a little bit of an issue for them. You do have an Eastern Washington team that I think is actually going to be a hold up against Orlando Robinson. Robinson has been tremendous for this Fresno State team. 19.5 points, 8.5 boards at 7 feet feet tall, shoots right around 34.5% from three-point range. Ironically enough, in home games, shoots more around 27.5% from three-point range, but he's went into full-on takeover mode. 25-plus points in four of the team's last five contests. Lone Wolves said he's had at least three turnovers in each of the last four games, but Linton Alcilles has been very solid down low for this Eastern Washington team. 16 points, 7.5 boards. He shoots 35% from three-point range. Angelo Algieri winds coming in from UNC Greensboro. 12 points, 6.5 boards. He shoots 37% from three. Eastern Washington makes 75% of their free throws. They've cut down on the turnovers in conference play. They wound up turning the ball over more around 12 times per contest, more like 15 out of conference. I think that they're going to be able to hold up there. And Stile Venters, 16 points, a steal, 4 boards, shoots 43% from three-point range. I think that that's going to keep Eastern Washington very live against the Fresno State backcourt that does have Isaiah Hill giving out 3 assists, but also 2.5 turnovers per contest. Anthony Holland shoots 43% from three-point range, and it is a Fresno State team that they shoot right around 72.5% the free throw line, but they struggle with their threes, shooting 32.5% from distance. I think that this is just a little bit too big of a number for Fresno State to be able to cover with their style. I think that Eastern Washington is going to try to speed things up a little bit, and we've seen it in a lot of these lesser tournaments that teams do wind up being able to get sped up quite a bit more. So I did wind up setting my total at 136. I think that this could be an ordeal if it's an 8-point differential with a minute left to go. Like, I think it's going to be, you're going to see a lot of fouling and a lot of marching to the free throw line. So my total at 136, I'm willing to go over. And in this spot, I wound up saying Eastern Washington as a 10-point dog, so I'm going to be willing to take a look at the points, and that will wrap things up for the Thursday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. A big thanks to Brian Butch for joining me in the last segment. If you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, whatever you for this podcast, you have one or two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters M, they mean does not matter. Size per usual. Please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to find whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the 5-star review. I'm coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, which means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be right back.